This is Anders Peterson, the intern pastor at Holden Village for summer 2012, and I'm here with
David Christian.
And where do you hail from?
I currently live in Port Angeles, Washington, and our son Thomas arrived here just a couple weeks ago to begin a year on staff in the kitchen, which was... as I think about it, was a fairly emotional thing for me as we were coming into the village and to see him, because it was, 37 years ago that I came into the village for the first time and was assigned to the kitchen and ended up spending 5 of the next 7 years up here in the kitchen. So I came up, the kitchen was my third choice. I wanted to be a maverick. I thought it'd be fun to be out in the woods chopping wood and stuff like that, or in what we used to call tape ministry.
Okay.
Now it's, recording digitally, but it used to be, taping on cassette tapes. I thought that'd be fun to hear all the things, but they stuck me in my third choice, the kitchen, and my 2.5 month appointment turned into 2 years, and then I left for a year and came back for 2 more, and left for a year and came back for another one. So,
can you tell us a little bit of what kitchen life was like?
It was very different than it is now. Okay. When I came in 1975, we of course all the meals, with the exception of Saturday night barbecue, were done with double settings.
Wow.
Which means no buffet lines other than the one outdoor barbecue. And there were waitry that would bring the food from the kitchen out to your table. It was served family style. So, breakfast, you had to go to first setting at 7 or second setting at 8. Lunch was at 12 or at 1. Dinner was at 5 or at 6:15. And in the kitchen, we'd put out the food and give seconds and so forth. And one of the bad things of that is people felt a little more rushed in their eating, because we had to get the first setting people done and wash the dishes and get the tables reset in time for the second setting. But we had, there were dish teams that did the dishes, and the waitry helped clear the tables and so forth. But so that's how that went. The food style was pretty different. There was a lot more meat and potatoes type stuff. That's where the world was at in
right.
those days. We had, I can remember making jelly rolls and pies. We had baked desserts for suppers with some regularity. We had pitchers of Kool-Aid on the tables. and we felt like we were doing a great service to the world, because we were recycling our aluminum or our tin cans, the big cans. That was kind of the extent of recycling back then, 1975. But when you think about it, I think the first ever Earth Day was 72, 73, something. So the world, people just weren't thinking about environmental things the way we take things for granted now.
Yeah.
So, we didn't do compost. Back then, we had what we call wet garbage,
okay.
where we just kind of scrape everything into that, and that got taken up on the tailings and kind of dumped up there. It's like we had a little, our own landfill where we got rid of the organic matter like that.
Wow.
So
you think it's still up there somewhere?
I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah, and there had to be a chain link fence around the outside of that, so that bears wouldn't come and get into the foodstuffs, and so that was.
They probably did anyway.
That on yeah. One summer there was, I want to say summer of '79 maybe, there was a problem bear that got in several times, started getting closer to the village, actually got into the kitchen one night.
No.
Yeah. I happened to not have the morning shift afterwards. A friend of mine, Will Mochon, did. And he came in and a bear had found a 5-gallon bucket full of molasses and had tipped it over. So there was 5 gallons of molasses on the floor and bear footprints.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And unfortunately, that bear ended up being shot. Because it was getting too close to the village. People were seeing it, and you know, we were in touch with the Forest Service, and they finally sent somebody up. And I remember being at dinner one night, and we all heard the rifle shots, and you know, you felt a little bit guilty because people, of course, wanted to go out and take pictures of the bear. So in spite of telling people not to, you know, they would do that. So, you know, collectively, we contributed to the bear feeling more comfortable around us. And
a vivid example of having to cohabitate with natural animals.
Yep.
And it's not their fault that they want to eat. And we've got jugs of molasses hanging out in the kitchens.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So what else do you remember of those?
Well,
era?
You know, one thing that I thought I wanted to be sure and say today was hunger awareness meal. And as I was going through the line, getting my quinoa, Thomas, our son, stopped me and said, "Dad, did you have hunger awareness meal back in the mid 70s? And we didn't, although we had its predecessor. It turns out that, and that got started before I was here, so I only know it secondhand, but there was a group of Lutheran potato farmers down near Moses Lake somewhere that did not have, they weren't rich men, but they were good Lutherans and they wanted to support Holden Village. So every fall, the village would send a truck and a number of staff members down to Moses Lake, and they would come back literally with, you know, like 2.5 tons of potatoes, which were donated by these potato farmers. And we would store them in one of the downstairs lockers and, you know, kept cool and dark. Potatoes would last for a long time. So that was a, you know, that saved on our grocery bill that we didn't have to buy potatoes. It also happened that on Sundays during the winter, when the offering plate was handed around, because staff here were volunteer, there was not a whole lot of money that went into the offering plate. And it was almost embarrassing, you know, a couple quarters or something would show up. And somebody came up with the idea, why don't we have a potato day where for one meal we just eat potatoes, which don't cost the village anything, and figure out, now that saved us X number of dollars from our food budget. And then at the end of the year, that would be contributed to the offering plate. So it became a way that the staff that didn't have money could make a kind of Sunday offering in the way that they ate once a week.
So it really was kind of the engine that started.
Right. And it was only done back then. It was only done during the winter time.
Sure.
Because, you know, they were just kind of reluctant to kind of thrust that upon guests.
Right.
And that was the last time that I was in the kitchen was in 1982, June of 82. And at that point, the village had still not moved to year-round hunger awareness meal. And so it was sometime during the 80s that it became a year-round thing, and it got turned into, I mean, it got the name of hunger awareness instead of just potato day. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way rituals or habits like that around this place kind of morph over time as people understand it differently and needs change. And, you know, and it's just such a great story too of the way that people have always wanted to do what they could to contribute to Holden, whether it be through potatoes or staff that are willing to eat just potatoes for a meal or
so what kept you coming back?
Well, I wasn't 100% sure what else I was going to do with, you know, I was just at that point, I had graduated from college. I had taught overseas for 2 years. I knew I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I had the 2 years here. Then I cooked at Luther Seminary. Then I got asked to come back and be the head cook. So I came back for 2 more years, and that's where I met Elizabeth, who ended up, you know, she's my wife, and so So, you know, as a place gets more and more important to you, you feel like you want to kind of keep up the relationship.
Sure.
So, and then, you know, we got married in 81, spent much of the next winter here, kind of an extended honeymoon. Then she started medical school. I went to graduate school in art. And Thomas was born, you know, 8 or 9 years later. And we kind of took a family year out and came up another year. So I've actually lived here a total of 6 years.
Really?
And that year was Thomas had just turned one. When we came up here. So he learned to walk and talk up here and so forth. So, and then 5 years later, I got elected to the board. So I spent 12 years on the board and was president of the board for 6 years. So there's, you know, it's just kind of continued to morph.
You're part of the backbone of this place.
Well, yeah. And we have one other son, John, who's 2 years younger than Thomas. And, you know, he's a student at St. Olaf College. He's going to be up here for J term this year. So it just keeps going round and round and round. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So is there a person here who's had a really big impact on your life?
Oh, there's lots. Yeah, there's a lot. To single out one person is always hard. I would want to mention John Schramm, who was director starting in 78, who, you know, I consider a real close friend. And one of my fond memories of John Schramm was, 78 to 80, during those years when I would come to cook in the summer, start summer shifts. You know, most of the volunteers in the kitchen would start at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And as one of the head cooks, I would come in any time between 5 and 5:30 to kind of get the bread going and kind of get things going. Well, it turns out that John Schramm is also an early riser, and he had a habit of getting up in the morning and kind of cruising around the village when most people are wisely still asleep. And he would pick up the coffee cups that people would have left on the walls, you know, in conversation and so forth, and would bring them into the dining hall. And he'd go to the dish pit and load the dish machine.
Wow.
And run the coffee cups so that we'd have enough coffee cups by breakfast. And he would whistle while he was doing that. So it's like, it almost felt like John and I were the only people that were awake in the village at the time. And we're not talking to each other. He's doing his thing, I'm doing my thing, but we're in the same space. And then when the village would start to wake up and more workers would appear, John would be done with that job and he would just kind of, you know, disappear. And I, to me, it was just, I get choked up thinking about it. It's just a classic example of a dancing servant sort of thing, that he just kind of quietly behind the scenes did what needed to be done to make this place go.
Wow.
And like I said, you know, hardly anybody except those of us that were up at that ungodly hour would have ever known that happened.
But kind of act, being humble and just serving.
Right.
For the sake of serving,
yeah.
And for the reward.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've gotten a chance to meet him over my time as the intern in the village and also in Chelan.
Ah.
Because his kids.
Right, right.
Live in Chelan.
Yeah, Mike and Mark.
So,
yeah.
Wonderful man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you propose here?
No.
Okay.
No, no. We knew each other for close to 3 years before we got engaged. So, and we got engaged back in Minnesota, and you know,
okay. No. So, what do you think you've brought to Holden all of these years? Because you've filled roles as someone on staff in the kitchen, but also in leadership.
Yeah, good question. I mean, I, I think I did a good job being the head cook. You know, John Tram used to say that for the village to be happy, you need to have good village musician and good food coming out of the kitchen. I mean, if you kind of have good music and good food, you know, everybody's happy. And not that I saw my job as keeping people happy, but I think we did a good job. People enjoyed working in the kitchen. I wrote what was the second version of the Holden Cookbook. Before I came, there was one called Holden Hilarity Cookbook, which was a collection of recipes that different villagers had contributed. And my, I don't know, second year of being head cook, I took several weeks and wrote the first edition of what we then called Cook Boldly, which then went through a subsequent Cook Boldly But Live in Care and Celebration More Boldly Still. And it went through several editions. It got changed every once in a while, but you know, I'm glad that that got going.
Yeah.
As far as my time on the board, I you know, I served for 6 years as president, and you know, the role that the board has played in leading Holden has really changed over time too. And in the early days, there was kind of a core group, many of whom stayed on the board for a long time. There used to not be term limits, and there were some board members that served 18 or 24 years, which is, you know, a long time. And when I came on the board in 1996, there were enough new board members coming on that were starting to think, you know, that's not the best model, that we need to have more new blood more often. So, yeah, so they went to term limits, and just kind of the role of the board, not trying to manage day-to-day stuff of the village, but setting policy and so forth. I had never had a position like that before, but because I was a stay-at-home dad during those years, I had time to invest in that, and had good help from other board members. I kind of shepherded the board through a time of transition to turning to, you know, we downsized the board from 29 down to 20 members, which is what it is now. You know, redid the bylaws and all that kind of stuff, all of which was to help the board understand its role, I think, in a way that was more suited for the time. The way the board had functioned before that was appropriate for the early years, but I think, you know, the board needed to kind of stretch and change, and you know, I think I did a reasonably good job of kind of shepherding the board through that time. So
is there a skill that you feel like you acquired here? It would seem to me like you probably mastered cooking.
Well, that was, yeah. I mean, I had, you know, as I mentioned, it was my third choice coming here. So, yeah. Or third choice for staff position. So, you know, I had dabbled a little bit in cooking, yeah. But I learned it here, you know, and much of it I learned, you know, the first 2 years I was here, a fair amount of time I was cooking, you know, alongside Paul Hinderly. So I learned a lot from him. So certainly that, you know, and you know, I'm not nearly the cook that he is, but I learned a lot of what I know from watching him, yeah. And so forth. And the other thing that I think I learned here, and really got a lot of practice at, was, you know, in running the kitchen, there's a lot of organizational management sort of stuff. Just, you know, how do you arrange a certain shift? How do you get, because you always had to get things done by a certain time, and you know, getting the volunteers who may know nothing about cooking at all, you know, to make all of that work, to work with people that way. You know, I had never had that experience before, but you have to figure it out if you were going to, you know, put out a good, I can recall one time we had cooked up a stock. So we had taken trimmings probably from, you know, cutting up chickens and had taken the trimmings from that and vegetables and, you know, made a stock that we were going to use later for a soup. And I asked one of the volunteers, a new volunteer, to drain the stock. So she took a colander and took the big pot of stock and proceeded to pour the stock into the sink. So what she ended up, because she didn't know about cooking at all. So what she ended up doing was flushing the good stuff down the drain. And saving the trimmings that we'd already taken all the flavor out of. So, we had volunteers that, you know, you couldn't make assumptions about what they knew and didn't know. So we had to learn to live and work with that. So, yeah.
Wow. So any other stories you want to share? Any other memorable moments that you want to make sure get recorded?
Just one funny one from the kitchen. July 4th, 1976, bicentennial year.
Okay.
We were going to have two meals that day, both of them outside, an outside brunch and then an outside barbecue.
Yeah.
And the barbecue, we were going to roast pork outside. Paul Hinderle was working. I worked the early shift, and we had it. Paul he liked a little flair for the dramatic sometimes, so he had figured out that we should probably put these big pork legs on the fire right about the time that people were lining up for brunch, that the timing would be just right. So I had the job of carrying them out and putting them on the fire. So, you know, and people are going, oh, wow, you know, because it's kind of a dramatic thing.
Sure.
And you've got an audience there. So we put these on. Well, we probably had 12 or 14 of them, and they each weighed 20-some pounds.
Whoa.
So you put three of those on one of the grates, and the grate starts to sink down a little bit. It bends down, gets closer to the fire. Well, the fire is very hot, and on the outside of pork legs, there's a lot of pork fat. So the fat starts to drip out and starts to flame up a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I was used to stuff like that from hamburgers, so I went inside to get a little squirt bottle to you know, squirt out the little flames.
Keep the flames from
But by the time I got out there with the squirt bottle, the flames were about 4 feet high.
Oh my goodness.
And the whole village is there watching this thing. And it's like, well, what do you do? Well, Paul had been inside and had seen through the windows the flames going up, and he came out very calmly, kind of looked at him, and everybody's kind of like, you know, what's going to happen? And he said, yeah, I think they're well enough seared right now. You can bring them in. We'll finish them in the oven, as if that had been the plan all along. And everybody just kind of breathed the collective sigh of relief.
Oh, I see.
And they were fine. I mean, they were seared on the outside, and they were finished on the oven inside, and they were delicious. But it was, you know, I learned something there too about, you know, if you've got a catastrophic situation, don't let people know how catastrophic it is. Figure out a solution. And
yeah.
Paul did it
just
perfectly.
And he just
yeah.
kept his cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Anyway.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
So, last question. So we've done 50 years of amazing ministry. Sounds like you have almost a decade of just being engulfed in it. And your hopes and dreams for the next 50 years, what do you want to make sure that, what do you hope to see Holden continue to do in the ways that it's been done in the last 50 years?
To be... One of the things, you know, I don't know if I'm willing to say it should be the thing, but one of the things is that it continues to be a place where young people can go and learn things about themselves and learn new skills. And, I think there's a lot of life skills that one learns while being up here in this sort of community. Yeah, and I hope it continues to be the kind of place that can transform young people's lives the way it transformed my life when I was young. I guess that's a better way to say it.
Amen.
Yeah.
You know, as a young person myself, I don't think that is not what I would expect to hear, and it's such a wonderful thing to hear that from one of our wise elders who have roles in leadership in this place. So I think sometimes there's a fear that piece would be kind of put aside, and to know that that's at least at the forefront of your attention and other people's attention gives me great hope for more years.
Well, when I think about, you know, the role that the village has played in the lives of my boys, I mean, I have a good friend, Tom Witt, that's been up here many times and will be here many more times.
Yeah.
You know, and he says he's not sure that he would have stayed connected to the church had he not been up here regularly as a young person,
sure,
where adults took children seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what my boys experienced, you know, that adults would talk to them and take them seriously. Well, you know, people have time up here, and so I hope that never gets lost.
Me too.
Well, because it's what the younger generations are going to be doing that's more important for the world than what those of us, you know, that are hanging on.
Amen.
I mean, it's not about us anymore. It's about you guys. So
thank you so much.
Certainly. David. Certainly.